is Genesis 28:10 through the beginning of chapter 32. So what I want to look at this morning is looking at an example of something. Well, actually, this Torah portion, we get actually more than a snapshot of Jacob's life. We get a whole 20 some odd years of his life. And so going to look at this, actually, I didn't think about it, but the way the Torah portions are divided up, this actually gives us a really nice start and end to a period of Jacob's life that was, I think, intensely transformative. Spoiler alert, next week he gets a name change, which, if you know anything about transformation of people's life, when you get a name change, that means something really significant. And I think that starts in this week's Torah portion. So, as Gail said, he's coming right off the heels of his brother who's screaming bloody murder. He takes the advice of his mom and dad, and he doesn't, like his brother, take a wife with the locals. Great, which is basically, that's what it says, the local girls. But he goes back to family, which it's almost like a Kentucky thing to go looking for a wife at a family reunion, but this, it's a little bit more removed, so. I think that actually speaks volumes about, you know, his decision. This is something that he starts off, he says, okay, I'm going to take mom and dad's advice. Granted, he had a brother who wanted murder, so he probably had another good incentive to move. But so he heads off to Padan Aram. And he falls asleep one night, and God visits him in a dream and says, as he reiterates the promises that have already been spoken to his grandfather and his father, that your call is to be a blessing to all the nations, that through you, you're going to prosper. I'm going to give you the land that you're currently in as an inheritance to you and your generations. And it said we have this, I can almost hear the guitar in the background, Stairway to Heaven right here, which is actually funny. In the TLV, it actually says Stairway to Heaven, which I think some people say ladder, some people, whatever it is. We have this vision he has in his dream of angels ascending and descending on this stairway, this ladder into heaven. And God who speaks to him and says, I'll be with you. And I think this is the start. This is Jacob making his decision to follow where the Lord is leading him. The next morning, he makes a vow. He promises that if you're with me and if you keep with me, then everything I have will be yours. I'll give a tenth of all that you give to me, we'll give back to you. Which is interesting because he's going with absolutely nothing. It's just him on. So this is, in some ways, it's, well, we'll see how that works out later. So he ends up with his kinfolk back in Haran. This is Laban, which Jacob encounters the trickster of all tricksters. His name means heel grabber. He himself is a trickster, but he's encountered with deception. But it's interestingly, he doesn't realize this until 7 years, where he goes to find a wife. He finds a girl that looks good, so he goes and asks her father if he can marry her. It's like, well, I just can't give my, you know, daughters away. I'll make you work for her. So 7 years passes, and it says that to Jacob it was though it was a few days. He's in love. What can we say? And so at the end of 7 years, he marries. I think in my wedding we forego the quick look under the veil, but we think that stems from this tradition of him not doing that and ending up with her sister instead. But his father-in-law, of course, is sort of revealing himself here. Says, okay, well, it's tradition, which I guess that makes sense. That's a family phrase. It's tradition that we marry off the oldest first, so it had to be this way. But Jacob still consents. He doesn't complain, but he says, okay, I'll work another 7 years for Rachel. So, 14 years later, he has two wives, soon to be four, as their maidservants, and God prospers them. There is plenty of family drama and intrigue, because we're nothing if not drama llamas. So there's competition between the women, there's pitting against sister about who can have the most children, and because Rachel's loved, but Leah's unloved, so God blesses her accordingly with more children. At the end of this period, he has 11 of his 12 sons, and this is where he's still there with Laban, and God blesses him further. He's realizing his situation here, so he's working for his father-in-law, and he says, well, I'm going to need something to provide for my house. How is this going to work? So he says, okay, well, I won't take any of the good sheep from your flock, but we'll only take the spotted and the striped ones. And in doing so, even after 14 years of treachery of his father-in-law, Jacob doesn't resort to treachery. He does it honestly. And God prospers that immensely, actually. So much so that his flock starts growing at an exponential rate and Laban's flock decreases, or at least it doesn't grow quite like Jacob's. And God prospers him in that. I think maybe here Jacob is waiting. He's listening. He knows where he's at, but he's waiting on God to lead further. So God shows up in his dream and says, all right, it's time to go. And so he takes all of his livestock, his kids, his wives, puts them on camels, and they get out of Dodge. It actually says he looked at on Laban's face, and it didn't quite look the same as it did a couple days ago. So I think he suspects treachery again, and he gets out. So, but the way, in all of this, Jacob didn't show any dishonesty, any trickery that Laban had clearly shown. And even when Laban catches up to him, realizing he's fled, he makes a covenant with Laban. And unlike the way that he left his relatives previously, where he snuck out before his brother could kill him, he reconciles the relationship. He makes a covenant with Laban that they are not to pass this stone with ill will towards each other, and so it ends a tenuous relationship on a good note. There's reconciliation. It's not perhaps the best of reconciliations, but it's family. What can I say? Either you get along or you get along. So one way or the other. So, in this epic of 20 years, I think we can extract some, what I like to call, elements of transformation. Because really what we're looking at here is an intense transformation that happens in Jacob over a very, it's 20 years, it's a good span of time. So, first of all, Jacob comes from a place of trickery, like his name means heel grabber with his brother Esau. And I think important first off in this is that Jacob realizes that a change is needed. He has to change something about the current situation where he's at, the whole debacle with his brother, bad relationships. Change is needed. He needs to put himself into a better situation, if you will. He sees what ends with his brothers, with his brother, and what the result of him taking a wife locally. So he heeds his father's advice and doesn't take a wife from the land, but heads to family, back to Haran. God intervenes and reveals himself to Jacob, which I think is a little bit of a confirmation for Jacob that this is God's will. This is part of his plan. But Jacob takes the first step, or does God, in when he shows up and reveals himself. I think it's a little bit of, it's both. And we'll see this actually as more in Jacob's life, that his decisions, his actions, they have very real consequences to him, to for his descendants, his large family after this. His decisions that he makes impacts generations to come. But it's also God shows up in a miraculous dream to him. So there's divine intervention and there's his choices. And they both, working in concert, promise great blessing for all the nations. This is the promises that God is making to Jacob, even as he made to Abraham and to Isaac. So Jacob responds in faith. He makes a vow. He says, God, whatever, if you're with me, then everything that you bless me with, I'll give back to you. This is kind of a little bit of a, it's starting. There's a shift here. This is a little bit different than the Jacob we knew in the last Torah portion, where he was tricking for his own gain at the expense of his brother. So Jacob deals honestly with Laban, even in the face of dishonesty, and I think this is where the hard part of this comes, because this is over 14 years of dishonesty with Laban. Jacob's transformation that has begun in him is tested. He's met with dishonesty, with deception. There's pushback to perhaps fall back on his old habits of, and to be perfectly honest, with Laban, most people would have looked at that and seen that as justified. His father-in-law did not act honestly whatsoever. We see later with his conversation with Laban, where he tells him, you changed my wages 10 times over. 100 times over, yes. And this is 20 years of this. So this is continual pushback. But that's what makes this transformation genuine, is that in encountering pushback and trials and troubles, Jacob holds firm. We don't hear a lot about what he says here. There's not a whole lot of dialogue there, but there's resolve that this is, that God has purposed this for his life, and he's going to see that through. So he's in it for the long haul. Jacob makes the decision again and again to not resort to dishonesty, even when it would have been justified. So in the midst of this trouble, we see Jacob beginning to change by seeking the good of Laban, who by no means was out for his good. God causes Jacob to prosper in such a way that it's clear that God is in control here, that he's taking Jacob's offering, as it were, of a blameless life, and he's prospering that. He's doing it in such a way that there's no way that you can connive animals mating in such a way that your flock grows at 10 times fast as the other guy's flock. This is clearly who's God, who's in control here. Kind of harkens to the passage in Romans 8:28, where God works all things out good for those works. Actually, I have that bookmarked for a reason. Now we know that all things work together for the good of those who love God, who are called according to His purpose. And Jacob meets all the check marks there. This is God placing a calling on his life, and he's responding in faith. So, I might be taking this smidge out of context, but I think it's okay. These 20 years of Jacob's are, I think, rightly called, I think you could call it an exile of sorts, where he's away from his immediate family. In his discussion with Laban, he says, "You saw I was in misery about the frost and the deception of your oppression of me, basically your exploitation of me for 20 years for your own gain." I think that could rightly be considered a little exile in its own. In Jeremiah 29, verse 11 is perhaps the most misappropriated verse that there is in the Bible. You've probably seen it on a coffee mug or on someone's t-shirt. But I'd like to read a couple of verses before that. This is Jeremiah 29, and I'm going to read verses 4 through 7. "Thus says Adonai Tzevaot, the God of Israel, to all those in captivity whom I removed as captives into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon." So this is Jeremiah speaking to the exiles in Babylon. "Build houses and live in them. Also plant gardens and eat fruit. Take wives that have sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons and give your daughters as husbands, so they may bear sons and daughters, and multiply there, and do not decrease. Also, seek the shalom, the peace of the city, where I took you as captives in exile, and pray for Adonai for it, for its shalom will be shalom for you." So this is God speaking to the exiles, and he says, you may not like where you're at, but it is where God has put you. So prosper there. Seek the good of the city that you live in, even if the city of the live-in are not your friends. These are people who have forcibly removed you, put you in captivity. But regardless, go on with your life. Live out your life. Set down roots. And prosper. Seek the prosperity of the people in the city around you, and their peace will be your peace. And that's really what happens to Jacob here, right? He seeks the well-being of Laban, who is not his friend, even though he's family. He's his father-in-law. But regardless, that God heaps that right back on him, where God blesses his hand and Jacob prospers. And the other sort of component to blessing is that it always comes with responsibility. That when God blesses, there's always responsibility attached to that. I'm probably just on the journey of learning that marriage and relationship, that's a big responsibility, and there's now responsibility involved. You're dealing with more people than just yourself. And Jacob has four wives. I can't even imagine what that was like. And now he has children, and now he has livestock. This is a massive responsibility compared to just 15 years, 20 years previous, where it's just Jacob being driven into the wilderness by himself. So, yes, God is blessing him, but there's responsibility attached to that. But God promised that. When he had spoke to Abraham, he had promised him that he would make your descendants multiply. You'll spread out to the east, to the west, to the north, to the south. And God will give you the land that you're dwelling in. Which, yes, that's a blessing, but that's a very, very important responsibility. the more responsibility and reward, the bigger and the blessing, the more blessings that this is. So, God calls Jacob to leave once again. He's reached a point where he's basically, I would assume, prospered all he can in this situation. His transformation is complete-ish, and it'll be tested once again. When Jacob listens and leaves from his father-in-law's land, but he only goes when God calls him to. I think this is important, that it probably would have made sense to him as soon as he had gotten enough livestock to feed his family, to get out of there as soon as he can. But he waits. He waits until God appears to him and says, okay, now it's time to go. And in putting faith in God's plan and what he has planned, God takes care of the loose ends. God ties up and reconciles relationships that are broken, which is a stark, stark difference from Jacob at the beginning, where there are no loose ends, there's nothing's tied up, there's no reconciliation, it's flee for your life because you've stolen something from your brother. When God works a transformation, circumstances may or may not change, but relationships with people will always, there was always going to be a transformation there, because that's how God is enacting his plan to bless the nations. It's through relationships. We see in Jacob's vision with God of where he sees angels ascending and descending, where God is establishing a ladder from heaven through Jacob, and through Jacob, blessing will come to the whole earth. So, God ties up the loose ends, not us. We don't take vengeance. God makes things right in his time. Also, God appears directly to Laban and tells us he's definitely intervening here on Jacob's behalf and says to Laban, don't touch him, don't cause any harm to him, because there will be trouble if you do. So God is warning Laban, which sounds familiarly like, do not touch my anointed. Well, you can see God's hand is on Jacob's life here, and he's intervening, but he's doing it in such a way that Jacob makes choices and God's blessing covers that. They work in tandem together. So Jacob returns to his father's house. We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but as he's coming back to his father's house and he has a caravan in tow, he has wives and children and livestock, one of the first things that happens is he seeks reconciliation with his brother. I think this is further proof that God's transformation is real and is acting in his life, is a relationship that was once broken is being restored. Relationships to his brother, his twin brother, are being restored. And it's partially, I think, we're told that Esau is, he's a man of the moment. And this is 20 years ago, where he is seeing Jacob come back, and so perhaps Esau has forgotten what he had said in his wrath, but I think God is again intervening here and acting on Esau's heart, and I think all of that works in concert with Jacob's decision. The first thing he does when he greets his brother is he sends out an offering, a gift to him before him, as sort of, you could see it as an appeasement. But really, I think what the change here is his attitude towards his brother. Jacob is seeking reconciliation, not conniving and backstabbing like his previous relationship was. So, returning to his father's house, Jacob seeks reconciliation to his brother, And God is the one who makes it complete, who seals that reconciliation. So, sort of looping back to this, a summary of Jacob's transformation. He recognizes that transformation is needed, that his current situation is not good. He acts in faith and takes a step in the right direction and follows God's leading. You could argue one way or the other whether he took the first step or God intervened and took the first step. But I think that's a good discussion to have, but it can quickly devolve into an argument of free will or God's sovereignty. But I think, at least in Jacob's life, we can see those working together. God has placed a divine calling on his life, but Jacob still has to make the choice to follow in that calling. Any time in those last 20 years, he could have easily called it quits and said, all right, I got a wife, I'm going home. But he stuck it out and didn't waver in God's calling on his life. So there's an expected pushback where his transformation is tested, but keeps persisting over time, even when the circumstances don't seem to be changing. When he's still under the thumb of a father-in-law who's exploiting him and taking advantage of him, he still keeps persisting. Circumstances may or may not change, but his relationships with his family ultimately are that's the true tell of God's hand in his life. So how does Jacob then fit in this grand scheme? We see this, it's a small snapshot, but it's a pretty large snapshot of Jacob's life. I think we see how Jacob fits into the larger story of God's blessing of the nations from his vision, where he sees this ladder. In John chapter 1, which is interesting because that's where our Haftorah portion comes from, but on page verse 51, we see this an explanation, kind of, maybe a hint about what this means. This is John chapter 1 verse 51, where Yeshua is talking and he says, amen, amen, I tell you, will you go see heaven opened up and the angels of God coming and going down on the Son of Man? So, is this ladder that Jacob envisions, there's foreshadowing of the Messiah of that is to come, but I think I can safely speculate here that the ladder is also Jacob. He takes an active role in establishing a relationship with God and the blessings that flow to the people around him. We see in the blessings that God gives to him, that to his seed, actually let's read that. That would be a good thing to do. This is from Genesis 28, and I'll start with verse 13. Surprisingly, Adonai was standing at the top of it, and he said, I am Adonai, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your seed. Your seed will be as the dust of the land, and you will burst forth to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed, and in your seed. Behold, I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land, for I will not forsake you until I am done with what I promised. So we see this promise that his seed will prosper and he'll multiply. In Galatians chapter 3, verse 16, Paul comments on this phrase, and your seed. He speaks about the promises to Abraham, but really the promises to Abraham are reiterated in the promises to Isaac and reiterated again. I think we read this morning from in the liturgy where it says that he confirmed it to Isaac and he established it to Jacob. So really, these are the same promises. This is Galatians 3:16. Now the promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed. It doesn't say, and to seeds as of many, but as of one, and to your seed, who is the Messiah. So Paul is, he's, what shall we say, sermonizing here. He's saying that this refers to the Messiah. But in the context of God's promise to Jacob, the seed is also, it's referring to multiple descendants. So is it seeds or is it seeds? Or is it seed? Well, I would say it's both. It's in the same way that the latter refers to both the Messiah and to Jacob. God's promise of a descendants as well as a seed is both reference to the Messiah and also to his descendants, to the sons of Israel that we see established in this Torah portion. In Isaiah, where on Friday nights we've been reading through that, and we got to that, the passage where it's, to you a son will be given, and you will call his name this, and you will call him Emmanuel. But it's weird because previous to that, Emmanuel is the name that's given to Jacob, to the sons of Israel, to the people of Israel. And so, once again, is Emmanuel Yeshua or is it the sons of Israel? Yes, the answer, I think is yes, that, God has a plan to bless the nations, and that plan has always been working through the sons of Israel. And ultimately in the seed of Israel is the fullness of that is displayed in the Messiah to whom we have our relationship. Our relationship is tied to God with. So, because, and this tying to God is, there's the transformation that occurs from Jacob. We see, this next Torah portion, he gets a name change, so when he transfers, as it will, his character changes from Jacob, which is heel grabber, he's people-centered, it's changed to Israel, and the blessing that's given to him is that you have been struggling with people, but now you will struggle with God. So when the focus changes in our lives from wrestling with people to wrestling with God, that's really when God's blessing is most prominently displayed to people around us, is when, despite the people around us, in Jacob's case, he had plenty of family, a lot of which he had given birth to which there will be plenty of drama and intrigue and wrestling with people, as it were. You even see his wife Rachel, who steals idols from her father and doesn't tell Jacob about it, and so there's deception, and even all of this is happening around him. That doesn't affect Jacob's resolve to remain focused on, as it were, wrestling with God, remaining focused on that instead of partaking with the drama around him. So the sons of Israel become blessings to the whole earth through this. So God begins, sustains, and completes the work. But he uses choices that Jacob, that you, and that I make every day to bring blessings to the whole earth. And that's really how Jacob fits into this plan of God's. And that's how you and I fit into this plan of God's. Nothing has changed, per se. Circumstances may change, but God stays the same, and his relationship to his people stays the same. And like Jacob, we all have a choice to whether wrestle with people or wrestle with God. Either way, God is going to work his will, but whether or not that benefits us is left entirely up to our decisions. Moses, in his parting words to Israel, says, I present to you a blessing and a curse, life and death. So choose life. You're still going to go into the land either way. God is still going to make his name known. But how it goes with you is entirely up to your choices. And I think God works, well, he works either way, but he works as a good example through us when we follow him. And we keep his commandments. And so, all right. So with that, I'll close this in prayer.